Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, June 1st, 2023. Presidio International Port Authority bill stops short before legislative deadline. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Austin. A bill to create an official port authority to govern the Presidio International Bridge did not hit the governor's desk before the end of the legislative session on Monday. The bill's supporters hoped it would reach the finish line after receiving 143 yay votes in the House on May 19th, but the bill never reached consideration by the Senate. HB 5400, authored by Big Bend Representative Eddie Morales, was originally the brainchild of Presidio County Judge Joe Portillo. In early March, Portillo petitioned both Presidio City Council and Presidio County Commissioner's Court to pass resolutions in support. Portillo hoped to take advantage of growing interest in Presidio from shipping companies and others interested in exploring alternative routes into Texas from Mexico, diverting traffic from bustling port cities like El Paso and Laredo. There's a lot of interest. Once this bridge is completed, for this to be the preferred port of entry for many businesses in the Chihuahua area, he explained. The bill would have created a legal entity separate from the county and city of Presidio, governed by a diverse set of stakeholders interested in growing traffic on the bridge. The Presidio International Port Authority would have been able to issue bonds, charge fees on the bridge, and to serve as a taxing entity. In addition to Portillo, the first board of directors would have included Presidio Mayor John Ferguson, Cibolo Creek Ranch Manager Tom Davis, Lajitas Golf Resort Managing Director Scott Beasley, Cesar Baeza of Baeza Cattle Company, and Isela Nunez, manager at Pro Customs Brokers. The board would have also included an international perspective from Sergio Mendoza Vidal, president of Desarrollo Economico del Estado de Chihuahua, DESEC, DESEC. Portillo was disappointed that the bill, in his words, died on the vine, but felt that it was just the start of something new. He was planning to continue pushing for the bill to be reintroduced next session and to continue fine-tuning it with help from stakeholders and elected officials. He knew the feeling of defeat would only be temporary. There's a saying in Spanish, "Ya ni llorar es bueno," he said. "I can't do anything about the outcome. All I can do is keep my chin up and keep moving forward." Portillo still feels like there are plenty of positive changes coming to the Presidio port of entry. He pointed toward the impending reopening of a rail line between Presidio and Ojinaga, tentatively set for December 2024. He was also excited about the progress on the vehicle bridge. Memorial Day weekend saw large crowds and long wait times at the port of entry, but he predicted that the bridge would be better equipped to handle those seasonal swells after all four lanes are open. The project is slated to be complete in September. Portillo said that, though the dream of having a quick turnaround on the new Port Authority had been dashed, he and county leaders would continue searching for ways to improve the bridge without the formalities. "I still believe it's the future. It has to be the future," he said. "I'm not just going to let it go." Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. Diego Estrada, member of the Marfa High School class of 2023, gifts his grandmother, Brenda Garcia, with a red rose at a graduation ceremony in the Shorthorn Gym last Friday. Legislative session ends with no changes to local short-term rental hotel occupancy tax policies. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Bills filed during the recently concluded 88th legislative session relating to local control over short-term rental regulation and hotel occupancy tax expenditure fell short of being signed into law, leaving local governments to reassess a path forward on tourism-related issues. Short-term rental, STR, legislation. HB 2665 started as an STR preemption bill that would have severely limited cities and counties' abilities to regulate STRs, allowing them to require a basic permit and fee, but preventing them from limiting duration, frequency, or capacity limits of STRs, as well as their locations. Cities, including San Antonio, have used zoning laws to curtail the number of STRs allowed on a singular block, for example. The bill, which was met with extreme opposition by the Texas Neighborhood Coalition, which lobbies on STR issues on behalf of its various chapters at the Capitol, transformed into a study bill that would have assessed how STRs impact communities across the state. Among other action items, the bill ordered for a task force's findings on the impact of rental properties and residential amenity rental properties on the quality of life in communities where those properties are located, including impacts on crime, noise, local school enrollments, and other unintended consequences. Justin Bregel, General Counsel for the Texas Hotel Lodging Association, which opposed HB 2665 in its preemption form, said if the STR study bill passed, he planned to advocate for the placement of a representative from Marfa on the committee. However, the bill died in the Senate, never having been referred to a committee. Bragiel, who has seen many STR bills introduced but never passed over the past few legislative sessions, said it was the first time the idea to do a study was brought up. And while it was an interesting concept, the bill's controversial beginnings as an STR preemption bill made it unpalatable to lawmakers. Marfa City Manager Mandy Rohn said she was disappointed with the outcome of the potential SDR study bill, which she supported. As a city administrator, Rohn said it would have been helpful to have access to hard numbers and empirical data, as opposed to anecdotal information on the impacts of SDRs. The questions that study bill seem to be answering are the things that people are asking us. It's stuff that we just can't answer, said Rohn. The effect that STRs are or are not having on a community, to be able to have some actual literature on that would have been helpful. Abby Boyd and Kate Calder of Help Occupy Marfa Equitably Home, a community action committee still getting off the ground, were confident that a study on STRs would have proven what they already believed to be supported by existing data from AirDNA, an STR data aggregate with which the city recently partnered, as well as anecdotal evidence that STRs have led to a shortage of available housing for locals, among other issues. We believe that it would have provided data in support of what we've been saying, that short-term rentals contribute to a housing market that harms communities and has already caused a lot of harm to ours, said Boyd. The idea to conduct a study on STRs in Texas communities could still come to fruition, said Bragiel, in the form of an interim charge, a directive handed down by the current Speaker of the House, Representative Dade Phelan, to the House Land and Resource Management Committee, instructing them to study the matter further and make recommendations before the next legislative session in 2025. Phelan did not immediately return a request for comment. While the interim charge would not have been the same depth and force as the study bill, said Bragiel, there would likely still be an opportunity for public testimony from Marfa to be heard. Whether or not an interim charge on STRs has been issued will be known by this fall, predicted Bragiel, and the findings would not be presented until the following summer, closer to when the 2025 legislative session begins. For now, the management of STRs remains in the hands of local officials who are tasked with assessing options moving forward. Boyd and Calder of HOME said they were relieved no laws passed that would take away Marfa's ability to regulate on the local level. The fact that because nothing gained any traction, municipalities will continue to be able to make decisions that best fit and best support our community, at least for the next 2 years, is a good thing in Marfa across the board, said Calder. More data collection should continue, said Calder, and community conversations with council members on potential solutions were the natural next steps. Boyd said options she would like to see Marfa City Council assess are the regulation of STRs via zoning, as well as a potential cap on the number of STRs. Our city is changing, and in response, we need to take a look at all of the codes and ordinances we have in place and see if they're still effective, if they're fair, and if they make sense for the Marfa that we have today and the Marfa that we expect to have in the future, said Boyd. This past April, Marfa Chamber of Commerce leaders, including Boyd, and locals addressed city council members asking for greater exploration of the STR regulations, drawing opposition from some STR owners. In candidate questionnaires published in the Big Bend Sentinel ahead of the May 6th general election, both newly reelected Mayor Manny Baeza and Mayor Pro Tem Raul Lara responded to a question on how they would address STRs, if at all, by stating they were waiting on bill outcomes from the legislative session and would revisit the matter after those decisions came down. Roan, who has no voting power on City Council, said it was possible City Council would tackle the issue this summer during the budget process, where they also revisit ordinances. Recognizing that STRs are a hot-button issue where people on both sides hold strong opinions, council will have to take all of that feedback into careful consideration when making any decisions, she said. Because of the number of STRs we have and the size that we are, I think Marfa is unique in a lot of ways, and I think our STR situation is no different. It's something that the city officials will have to grapple with at some point, for sure, said Roan. Roan said, in general, clearer direction and more specific guidelines from state legislators would be helpful for Marfa City Council moving forward. As it stands, because Marfa is a general law city, an unchartered city that may only exercise powers that are specifically granted or implied by statute, according to the Texas Municipal League, it needed to proceed with caution legally as far as any STR regulations go. If the legislator were to lay out, you can regulate or you can't regulate, or you can enforce density or not, I think it just would have given council just some clear guidance that's not going to put the city in any type of legal trouble, said Roan. Hotel occupancy tax, hot legislation. SB 1208, a bill sponsored by Senator Cesar Blanco, would have expanded cities' legal uses for hot expenditure, allowing small municipalities west of the Pecos River to utilize hot taxes for infrastructure projects, including streets, water, sewer, and broadband internet. But the bill gained little traction in the Senate Natural Resources and Economic Development Committee, to which it was assigned and never passed. Marfa City Manager Roan and Alpine City Manager Megan Antrim previously voiced support for the hot tax for infrastructure initiative. Roan said, because Marfa's population can increase significantly on any given weekend with events and festivals, being able to use hot funds for general infrastructure improvements that support both locals and visitors made sense. When we have visitors come in and they're paying that hotel occupancy tax, they're coming, they're visiting, but they're also having an impact on our infrastructure, said Roan. That's more people on our streets. It's more people using our sewer and water. Roan was grateful for Senator Blanco's support on the effort, but was frustrated the bill didn't progress further and hoped in the future similar bills garnered greater support and didn't stall out in committee. I guess we can cross our fingers for 2025, said Roan, and really start working on it and try and build that momentum. Bragiel and the Texas Hotel Lodging Association, THLA, opposed SB 1208 on the grounds that the organization supports existing laws that require hot tax to be used for tourism promotion and advertising of the area. THLA did support a bill, HB 1689, that passed, allowing for counties that levy a hot tax, such as Brewster County, to use hot tax revenue for hot collection. Brewster County has recently struggled to collect all of the hot taxes owed and hired an Austin-based company to help with enforcement. Bill to create border task force stalled. Special session revives bill enhancing smuggling penalties. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Austin. A bill that would have created a Texas border force to aid existing law enforcement in border counties failed to reach the governor's desk by the end of the 88th Texas legislature on Monday. A separate immigration-related bill, one creating enhanced penalties for those charged with human smuggling, got a second life during a special session called by Governor Greg Abbott Monday evening. Abbott said that the session called to begin late Monday night would be the first of multiple. His list of border-related priorities included a $5.1 billion cash infusion to secure the border, a push to designate Mexican drug cartels as foreign terrorist organizations, and enhanced penalties for human smuggling-related offenses. The first special session concerns smuggling-related offenses, using language borrowed from HB 800, one of a handful of Republican-sponsored immigration bills that failed to make it to the governor's desk by Monday. That bill, renamed HB 2, passed the House during the special session on Tuesday, according to State Representative Eddie Morales, who represents the Big Bend region. The Senate will take it up during the continued special session on Friday. The bill would enhance already enhanced penalties for human smuggling. Prior to September 2021, a person could not be charged with human smuggling under state law unless there was proof that money had changed hands. That changed last year, leaving some border counties struggling to provide adequate jail space for a sudden influx in such cases. This year's legislation would increase mandatory minimums, a 10-year minimum jail sentence for felony human smuggling, as well as a 5-year minimum sentence for people charged with operating a stash house. In a press release published on Monday, Abbott also reiterated his support for a budget appropriation of $5.1 billion to secure the border and fund the Texas National Guard, the Texas Department of Public Safety, and the border wall. Next on the list for potential future special sessions, a push to formally recognize Mexican drug cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. This language was added by the Senate to HB 7, the border security bill that would have created a Texas border force to supplement existing law enforcement operations, just before it was snuffed out by unresolved disagreements between conference committees in the two chambers. Designating cartels as such under the Texas Penal Code could open up a spectrum of possibilities for surveilling and criminalizing people suspected of immigration-related crimes. If passed, the bill would have made it a crime to enter the United States outside of a port of entry, adding a state charge to an existing federal law. The next special session will be convened by the governor in September, said Morales. It was unclear whether the bill known as HB 7 would be revived at that time. As the Sentinel was going to press, District 22 Senator Brian Birdwell filed SB 8, a bill with strikingly similar language. Birdwell's bill calls for establishing a Texas border force and making funds available to certain governmental entities. State Senator Cesar Blanco, the Big Bend's representative in the Senate, was staunchly opposed to HB 7 and was added to a Senate conference committee in the final hours of the regular session. On May 24th, Blanco took to the floor with an impassioned speech asking for the state to reevaluate existing border policies and enforcement before adding new law enforcement protocols. "I'm concerned law-abiding border residents, who are predominantly Latino, will be subjected to harassment and pretextual traffic stops by this new border force," he said. He felt that border residents should be consulted and considered in efforts to police their communities rather than having policy dictated by lawmakers and agencies located far away from the communities most immediately affected. "If this was happening in your districts, I know you would stand up for your constituents and communities," he said. "But it's not happening in your districts. It's happening in mine and every border senator's district."
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, June the 1st, 2023. City sets pay for election officials. By Sean Yorks. With early voting for the Fort Stockton mayoral runoff election beginning next week, the Fort Stockton City Council on May 22nd approved the rate of pay for the officials who will be working at the election site. The presiding judge for the election will be Linda Blanco, early voting ballot board judge will be Sandy Young, and the alternate for both will be Abby Allen. Their rates of pay will be $15 per hour, said City Secretary Marina Cantu. There will be a minimum of 3 workers at each precinct. Early voting and election day, June the 20th, voting will take place at the Pecos County Courthouse Annex on Nelson Street. The city approved Ordinance 23-108, which is a budget amendment so the street department can purchase a John Deere grader in the amount of $334,000. The council approved an interlocal agreement between the city and Pecos County for paving of Sycamore Street. The county commissioner's court approved the agreement earlier in the day. Our goal here was to identify that Precinct 1 provide the equipment and manpower while the city provides the materials, said Frank Rodriguez. This will allow the city to continue working on other streets. The city and county had a verbal agreement last year but wanted a commitment in writing this year. Mayor Pro Tem Ruben Falcon read proclamations recognizing National Public Works Week, Peace Officers Memorial Day, and Fort Stockton Police Week and Memorial Day during its May 22nd meeting. Law enforcement officers, including members of the Fort Stockton Police Department, accept a profound responsibility and work to uphold our laws, safeguard our rights and freedoms, and serve on the front lines in the fight against crime and terrorism, Falcon read. We honor the heroism of all our law enforcement officers, especially those who have given their lives so that others might live, asking God's blessing for the families and friends they left behind. President Kennedy created Peace Officers Memorial Day in 1962 in honor of the federal, state, and municipal officers who have been killed or disabled in the line of duty. The Public Works Proclamation, read by Falcon, says in part, Public Works professionals focus on infrastructure, facilities, and services that are of vital importance to sustainable and resilient communities and to the public health, high quality of life, and well-being of the people of Fort Stockton. These infrastructure, facilities, and services could not be provided without the dedicated efforts of public works professionals, who are engineers, managers, and employees at all levels of government, and the private sector, who are responsible for rebuilding, improving, and protecting our nation's transportation, water supply, water treatment, and solid waste systems, public buildings, and other structures and facilities essential for our citizens. Bid to halt groundwater permit denied. Belding Farms, a pecan grower in Fort Stockton, is seeking to stop renewal of groundwater permit to export water out of Pecos County, was denied its legal request to halt the process on Tuesday. A state court district court judge refused to hear the emergency restraining order that sought to prevent renewal of the permit by the Midland-Pecos County Groundwater Conservation District, and instead granted a procedural challenge to the request. The district general manager renewed the permit after learning of the restraining order request and before a court hearing could be held. Belding Farms said it would appeal the court's order to the 8th Court of Appeals, where two other similar challenges by the pecan grower are pending. We look forward to our day in court where these serious legal issues can be heard on their merits rather than on procedure, said the chairman of Cockrell Investment Partners, which owns Belding Farms. Our concerns are twofold, that the permit conditions are too lax to adequately protect the aquifer and that the groundwater district rules are too weak to predict and prevent increased pumping impacts. Other groundwater users across the state voiced similar concerns to lawmakers during the legislative session that ended on May 29th. Belding Farms wants to protect its water rights and those of other users, as well as ensure the sustainability of the Edwards Trinity Aquifer. Moreover, Belding Farms argues that the permit is invalid because construction of the groundwater export project did not start within 3 years after issuance, as required by the Water Code. The permit is held by Fort Stockton Holdings, which is owned by the Williams family, and originally was issued by the Middle Pecos GCD in 2017. If renewed, the groundwater would be exported from Pecos County to the cities of Midland, San Angelo, and Abilene. Belding Farms is not opposed to water exports as long as adequate rules are in place to protect the Edwards Trinity Aquifer. Still, aquifer sustainability is just as critical for the cities planning to import water as it is for the exporting area. Belding Farms uses groundwater to irrigate its pecan orchard and has invested millions of dollars to increase the efficiency of its water usage. Blanco and Moore passed legislation to plug abandoned water wells. The Texas Senate has passed House Bill 4256, a bill authored by Representative Andrew Moore and sponsored by Senator Cesar Blanco, to create a fund to plug abandoned water wells, also known as P13 wells, in Pecos County. B-13 wells were drilled for the purpose of producing oil, but were unsuccessful. As a result, unplugged or deteriorated B-13 wells open up layers of porous rock, revealing water and minerals and toxic chemicals that are contaminating the surrounding land and air. The most notorious case is Lake Bomer in Pecos County, where a P-13 well has created a lake that covers over 60 acres, is 3 times saltier than the ocean, and has sulfate levels 25 times higher than safe drinking water. Last year, the Texas Department of Transportation spent $30 million in Pecos County to move a state highway due to sinking caused by Lake Bomer. Many ranchers in far west Texas have been plagued by the environmental crisis caused by abandoned water wells. To address this issue, House Bill 4256 will create the Leaky Water Well Program to help finance the plugging of water wells, said Senator Blanco. I appreciate Representative Muir for authoring this bill in the House, and I'm proud to have passed this bill with him to alleviate the environmental and public health concerns caused by these wells. The Leaky Water Well Program will be administered by the Commission on Environmental Quality and establish what projects are eligible for funding based on the threat of leaking poses to its surrounding areas. Representative Muir added, I am glad to have worked with Senator Blanco to send this bill to Governor Abbott's desk. The bill is a critical first step in solving the issues many West Texas landowners face when it comes to leaky water wells. By creating the Water Well Grant Program through the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality and funding it, certain groundwater districts will now be able to assist landowners in mitigating the harmful effects some of these wells have had on other water sources, livestock operations, and sensitive wildlife systems. The bill now heads to Governor Abbott for final approval. Aleut Festival begins Friday. Iran will be the place to be on Friday and Saturday as the annual Aleut Festival is slated for June 2nd and 3rd at the park in Iran. Admission is free for kids 3 and under, $5 for kids 4 to 12, and $10 for 12 and up. And purchase of a wristband gives festival goers access to water jumpers, water wars, archery tag, gaming trailer, jelly balls, mechanical bull, bungee jump, rock wall, nine-hole aluminum golf, toxic McDowell, high striker, the dance, and the fireworks show. A parade and pageant will also take place, and food and merchandise vendors will be on site. Saturday night's dance features Family Jewels, and the fireworks show is presented by Truckload Fireworks. Wristbands will be sold at all gates. The Pecos River 4-H Club will have the Aleut Trap Shoot, and the Iran General Hospital District's Rumble Color Run will take place Saturday morning at the Iran Wellness Center. The Fun Run begins at 8, and the 5K Rumble at 8:20. Aleut Gun Show is Friday and Saturday at the Iran 4-H building. The event is sponsored by the Iran Sheffield Chamber of Commerce, which offered some tips for attending the outdoor event, including bringing a source of shade, chairs, and sunscreen. Anyone participating in water events should consider bringing a change of clothes as well. Friday activities begin at 5 p.m. and Saturday's activities will be from 10 to midnight. The parade is at 5:15 Friday and begins at the high school. The theme this year is Aleut Comic Book. Uber will be available to take you from one part of the park to the other. There are 4 locations in the park, and these locations will have times as to when it will be running. This is a free service. However, tips and donations are appreciated, as this will help fund future events. Coming back this year will be Colorado-based Cave Sim. The free activity for kids and adults will be taking place this coming Saturday at the festival in Iran. Cave Sim, a mobile cave exhibit, will be at the festival, and the public will have the opportunity to put on hard hats and lights to explore the mobile exhibit. The exhibit is not virtual reality, but contains 60 feet of physical tunnels, complete with stalactites, artificial cave animals, and replica artifacts. As participants crawl and climb through the tunnels, a computer on the outside of the exhibit keeps track of how careful participants are not to touch the fragile objects in the cave. Family members who don't feel like crawling can watch on night vision cameras from outside the mobile cave. Cave Sim will also have ropes and pulleys tower to help kids learn about physics, as well as search and rescue in vertical caves. A crawl box or mini cave will provide a fun challenge for people from age 3 to adult. Cave Sim was very popular at the festival in 2021. All the activities are free thanks to sponsorship by Ira Yates Iran Energy House. Sol Ross State University in Alpine will present a mobile STEM experience Saturday at the festival. The experience features hands-on activities for kids and adults, and teachers can get inspired with content and technology infused with an agriculture theme and learn about the careers behind the science.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, May 25th. Calixco hired as new Ward County Senior Center Director. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward County Commissioners approved the hiring of Lena Calixco for the position of Ward County Senior Center Director during the regularly scheduled meeting on Monday. Quote, I interviewed 3 candidates, all qualified. My pick was Lena because of her work background, her organizational skills, managing experience, and years of working with people. I presented my pick to the 9 members of the Senior Center board members, and they chose Commodore Ryan, Kim Hughes, and Nellie Oliver to participate in the interview, Ward County Judge Holly said. Calixco is currently secretary at the Ward County Extension Office. In the past, she owned her own business and had 7 employees working under her guidance. Quote, Lena has a very caring heart, and that's what is needed there. She's also very good at organizing events, which will be great for our senior center, Ward County Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna said. Quote, she's a good choice, said Precinct 3 and 4 Commissioners Dexter Nichols and Eddie Gnomes. Calixco will begin her new position at the senior center on June 5th. Quote, I greatly appreciate this opportunity I have been given. I will serve the senior citizens of our community to the best of my ability, Calixco said. In regular business, only a single bid was received back out of several requests sent out for construction of the new jail. The bid received was from Butler and Cohen Design and Build, which Judge Holly presented to the commissioners. Quote, this company has a good record for building jails. We could hold out and try for another bid, but since we didn't have any response from the other companies I contacted, it could be a waste of time while construction costs rise even higher, Holly said. The commissioners gave approval to start negotiations for construction price agreements with the company. In other business, the commissioners voted to raise the salary of the Ward County Golf Course Pro Shop Manager to $67,000, which is comparable to the salary of the course manager. Quote, Lisa Birdwell worked as part-time Pro Shop Manager for several years. The budget allowed $55,000 a year for the position, and Lisa was paid by the hour to stay within the budgeted amount, Holly said. Tim Smith is the Golf Association's new pick for the full-time position of Pro Shop Manager. Present for Monday's meeting was Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Gnomes, and County Judge Greg Holly. The next regularly scheduled commissioners' meeting will be at 9:30 a.m. on June 12th in the Ward County Courthouse at 400 South Allen Street. Bad news for hospital renovation plan. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. Bill Parsons of the Vandergrift Group Architects addressed the Ward Memorial Hospital Board of Managers at Thursday evening's meeting in reference to the bid acquisition request for the hospital expansion plans. Parsons told the board there are no contractors willing to take on the hospital's expansion plan for the approximately $14 million the hospital planned to have for the project. Quote, construction costs have increased 30% to 40% in the last few months, Parsons reported. WHM had a master plan created to present to the Ward County Commissioners Court, which the court approved, that was designed to be worked on in phases. Phasing would have allowed for the renovations and expansion to be done at the existing hospital site and continue taking care of patients while the work was being completed. Quote, contractors basically don't want to work on an existing hospital in phases. They are concerned about working where there are patients and what is called the fear factor, meaning they don't know what unforeseen problems might be uncovered and turn into unexpected cost when remodeling an older existing structure, Parsons said. Parsons told the board that construction projects in the Permian Basin are running close to $100 billion. Quote, contractors can pick and choose their work projects, and they are choosing high-dollar new projects with no fear factor involved in the construction. That combined with a shortage of skilled workers for the subcontractors, especially in the mechanical area, whereas the electrical is steady, but this makes the local hospital project not very attractive to any of the area contractors, he added. Ward Memorial Hospital Administrator and CEO Leticia Rodriguez said, quote, I have acquired $5.8 million in grants, which will expire in December 2024. At the rate of construction growth, we will need more than double what we have now. If the work was going to start next month, we may have enough money. And continued, the cost of materials and construction work is rising faster than we can get the grants. The price is now $450 per square foot for outer construction and $300 to $400 a square foot for inside construction, with talk already circulating that it will soon be $550 a square foot. I have a few more ways to try for funding. I plan to contact U.S. Representative Tony Gonzalez and ask for available help for small critical care hospitals. But we may not be able to catch up to the rapid rise in construction cost, end quote. The age of the hospital allows the hospital to fall under a grandfather clause, which makes the hospital exempt from complying with regulations and new building codes. The grandfather clause means any real estate building, structure, or land that existed before the bylaw comes into force is considered to be grandfathered into compliance with today's rules. The property owner doesn't have to bring the property up to code or to comply with the rules and regulations of the bylaw recently in force. The only caveat is that if the homeowner ever applies to improve the grandfathered property, then they have to bring everything about the property up to code or to comply with the rules and regulations of the new bylaw. Quote, the hospital is subpar in the areas of our bathrooms, heating, and AC cooling, as well as the lack of hot water in the rooms from time to time, Rodriguez said. These areas are where the contractors really get affected by fear factor. When it comes to plumbing, heating, and cooling replacement in old structures, there can be some very costly problems come up, Parsons said. No action was taken. Ward Memorial Hospital board members present for the meeting were Lisa Stewart, Angel Fuentes, Gerald Carlson, Boyd Barron, and Mickey Mitchell. Absent from the meeting were John Fawcett, Jeff Burdick, and Frank Heslin. The next board meeting will be June 8th at 6:15 p.m. in the WMH Physical Therapy Cardio Unit boardroom at 420 South Ike Street. The hospital board meets every first and third Thursday of the month at 6:15 p.m. MHS top grads recognized by board. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD School Board met in regular session on Monday evening at the Administration Building Boardroom. The meeting began with the invocation given by Trustee Steve Tuxhorn and moved forward to the recognition of students who have advanced past district competition. The salutatorian and valedictorian were introduced to the MWP ISD School Board trustees. Valedictorian for MHS 2023 is Mia Mata with a grade point average of 4.957. Mia will be attending Texas Tech University, where she will major in psychology. Salutatorian Kaylee Holden has a grade point average of 4.83 and will be attending the University of Texas in El Paso, where she will be double major in chemistry and music. Jeannie Jackson's third graders, who participated in an Earth Day project they shared with the Sand Hills Nursing and Rehabilitation Home residents, gave a PowerPoint presentation to the board members explaining what the project encompassed. Regional tennis qualifiers were introduced and recognized by the board members. Talissa Greiner was recognized for being a state qualifier. Girls track regional qualifiers, area champs, and state qualifiers were introduced to the Board of Trustees. Next, boys track was recognized and introduced. They had 5 state qualifiers and 1 regional qualifier. The girls softball team finished the season as district champs with a 10-0 record and by district qualifiers. Next up, R.J. Lopez, architect and accredited learning environment planner with Park Hill, gave a bond update to the Board of Trustees. Quote, "The overall completion schedule is about the same, with the exceptions of the projects that were canceled last month. We are still exploring ways to get some improvements to the bus barn, but we have $800,000 available for it, and the last contractor we talked to was going to run $1.8 million. We are not giving up yet. Maybe something will present itself as a solution," Lopez said. The natatorium is close to being finished, according to the report. The outer glass wall is being installed now and is expected to be ready for use this summer. The field house is in the finishing stages, as well as the complex renovations. In a no-action-required item, MWP ISD Superintendent Chad Smith gave the April enrollment report to the board. Quote, "Our enrollment seems to be on a roller coaster for some unknown reason, but our April numbers are at a total enrollment of 2,181 students for the district," Smith said. In an action needed item, Katie Jones, financial manager, discussed the renewal of the current bank contract with American Momentum Bank. Every 2 years, the school district has to procure or renew a contract with a local bank. $1 to $2 million are deposited and handled by the bank on the school's behalf. Quote, "The Teachers Education Association has strict guidelines for choosing a bank. You go to their website, put in your zip code, and they will give a choice of 3 local banks. Our choice was Tejas, American Momentum, and Citibank. We chose American Momentum because they do not charge us for any of these services we use with them. They told us if we renew our contract with them, the agreement will remain the same for the coming 2 years, but if we renew at the end of that time, we will probably have to start paying some of their fees, Jones said. The board agreed to renew the contract with American Momentum Bank for the next 2 years. The schedule for the Board Member Leadership Training Institute was presented to the board by Smith. The schedule is June 14th through 17th for Smith, Reyes, Fine, Almanza, and Garcia will be held in San Antonio. The June 21st through 24th training for Tuxhorn and Upchurch will be held in Fort Worth. This is a no-action item. Present for the meeting was Josh Schwarb, Donna Garcia, Raymond Reyes, Steve Tuxhorn, Nancy Upchurch, and Chad Smith. The next regularly scheduled board meeting will be at 6:30 p.m. on June 19th in the Administration Building Boardroom at 606 South Betty Street. Any person who has a concern or question can request to be placed on the board meeting agenda. Anyone interested in addressing the Board of Trustees needs to pick up a registration form from the administration office. Individuals may only address issues which are listed on the agenda, which is posted 72 hours before the meeting day. They must be registered to speak by 12 noon on the day of the meeting and will have 4 minutes to speak. The public is encouraged to become involved in affairs concerning our students. Public hearing set on 14th Street property. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Before Tuesday's City Council meeting began, City Secretary Tanya Todd administered the oath of office to Calvin Carroll and Jeppy Wilson and Mayor Adam Steen. Once the meeting got underway, and after establishing a quorum, approving minutes and consent items, the new council then re-elected Wilson as mayor pro tem. As its first act, the newly constituted council approved a contract with Ward County for billing and collection services for the new fiscal year. City Manager Rex Thee told the council, quote, "The contract is the same as the previous year, except the cost is a little less at $3,028.80 for the 2024 tax year, which is calculated at 55 cents a parcel," end quote. Next up was to consider acting on the Code Enforcement Officer's report regarding properties in violation of city ordinances. The report was submitted by Director of Public Works Richard Covington and reflected 6 notices given for violation of garbage, trash, or building. Of those issued, 2 have complied, 819 South Allen and 800 South Main, 3 are pending, 100 North Main, 200 South Gale, and 834 West 2nd Street. The owner of the final property, 605 West 14th, has been fined for noncompliance $281, and the next step for that property will be filing with municipal court. The report was approved as submitted. Council members then voted unanimously to hold a public hearing during the next council meeting on June 13th to declare 518 West 14th Street as unsafe and call for repair or demolition. Quote, "The house was burned previously and is not livable. The owner is currently staying on the property in a trailer. Therefore, as with a previous home, we have to be careful not to displace him," Thee said. The public hearings will be held at 3 p.m. in the council chambers. Anyone is invited to attend and speak for or against the properties being demolished. After the hearing, if council members vote the properties to be demolished, the owner will then be ordered to demolish the house within 10 days. Quote, "If the owner doesn't comply with the order and demolish the house within 10 days, then the city will step in and demolish it. The city will then obtain a lien on the home for the cost of the demolition, Thee added. In other business, the council accepted a donation of a maintenance and tire repair service truck for the Monahans Volunteer Firefighters Organization. Quote, a truck was offered to the fire department by Targa at a really good price, and they cannot use it for firefighting without the city owning and insuring it. So they want to buy it and donate it to the city, Thee said. The truck has a crane and an air compressor and will be awash with liability, he added. The donation was approved. Near the end of the meeting, the group convened into executive session to discuss personnel matters, council member District 1 appointment. The seat is currently left unoccupied after the recent passing of longtime member Rudy Hernandez. After reconvening into open session, no action was taken. In routine matters, the April accounts payable were approved by the council, totaling $1,077,000. The April monthly departmental reports and minutes were also approved by the City Council. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. The Council will meet again on June 13th in the Council Chambers at City Hall, located at 112 West 2nd Street at 3 p.m. The meeting is open to the public. Woman says boyfriend choked her during argument. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man was arrested last Friday night after he was picked up on a warrant for allegedly choking his girlfriend during an argument. Officers were called to the 1400 block of South Main on May 9th around 12:49 p.m. in reference to a civil issue. According to Monahans Police Department Captain Stormy Laws, quote, Jenna Ramirez told officers on the scene she and her boyfriend, Stetson Standish, age 31, of 1403 South Allen, were in an argument over a phone, and he assaulted her by choking her 2 days prior. Ramirez said the argument began because Standish always wanted to use the phone, Laws added. Officers conducted a civil standby so Ramirez could remove her belongings. An officer spoke to Standish, who was in the home at the time. Quote, when asked what happened, Standish said, something that shouldn't have, Law said. Because the assault happened prior to officers being called to the scene, a warrant for Standish was obtained. He was subsequently arrested on May 19th and booked into the Ward County Jail, charged with assault, family violence, impeding breath, a third-degree felony. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 10 years or less than 2 years, and a fine not to exceed $10,000.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.